Good morning, everybody. I'm so happy to see all of you. I'm not going to have a cough drop in my mouth the whole time. I had a teacher at GCC who always had cough drops. He was going, oh, he was talking the whole time. And I've thought about that. That was like 25 years ago. And it was, So if I cough, I apologize. I've still got a little bit of a funk, but I think it's kind of the regular thing right now. Everybody's got a bit of a cough. Good morning, everyone. We have been working through the book of John. If you haven't been paying attention, I will remind you. We've been working through the book of John. And part of that, we do a little review, and I like that because there's so much that's being covered. If you haven't noticed, John is trying to tell us through Jesus' ministry that Jesus is God and that because Jesus is here, because Jesus came and took human form, God on earth, he changes everything with this story. And we have the luxury of knowing the whole story. But as the story goes along, we see that the Old Testament pointed to Jesus and that Jesus, his ministry, and then his death and resurrection changed everything. And we ask the question throughout this, who is Jesus to you and what do we want from him? And this doesn't mean, who's your Jesus, who's your Jesus, who's your Jesus? It means, are you aligning yourself through the understanding and the realization? Are you aligning yourself with Jesus and understanding who Jesus is and that what you want from him is, well, to be aligned, to be more like him, not some sort of individual truth, but to understand the truth of it all, of Jesus being God. And then we have worked through John, and it's the Gospels are amazing stories, and they sometimes read like just information, and then they're a story of what's actually happening with the details. And we've gotten to a point where we've been building up with Jesus' ministry, with miracles, with him displaying his power, and prophecy coming true, all of this, and then we're condensing down, and we've spent a long time with him eating, having dinner with his friends, and talking about what's happening, what's to come. And they've been confused the whole time. They're still a little confused. But he's telling them what's going to be happening. I'm leaving you. I love you. And I'm going to be here right up to the end. And then right at the end, we see a prayer last week that he prays for us, for the believers, for the church. And that through that prayer, he asks that we show our unity, our love as a Christian body to the world. So the details get really condensed right as we're getting into these last chapters of John. And John 18 has a lot. And I went down lots of rabbit holes, and it was a lot of fun, and I encourage you. Because as long as we've been on John, it's been a while, there is a lot. There is a lot of prophecy fulfilled. There's a lot of symbolism that takes place. And right in John 18, I'm going to try to not give it all to you because we'd be here for a really long time. And while it would be great, I don't think our rear ends can handle that today. But I'm going to point out some stuff because it all points to eventually what I want to get to at the end because there are so many lessons that we could pull out from John 18. So he has just prayed. Jesus has prayed this prayer asking that we would know, that we would have unity as a body. And so we go from there, and I think John 17 starts with this too, but he says, when he had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples across the brook Kidron, where there was a garden, which he and his disciples entered. Now, I forgot to say, Pastor Kyle's touched on it a couple of times, the Gospels all cover big portions, but they don't all cover everything. And John seems to have written with the understanding that, the other guy's got that. You don't need to know all the details. So there are portions that happened in the other Gospels. And for the sake of saving time and my mental capacity, if I say in the other Gospels, it was Luke, Mark, Matthew, you know, it was there. But that's going to come up a few times as I go through John. But they cross the brook Kidron. And this is significant. There's symbolism there because this flowed out of the temple. This is during Passover. There were thousands and thousands and thousands of animals being sacrificed, and that's a lot of blood. And that blood was going from the temple, flowing into this brook. So the symbolism there, Jesus is crossing a river of blood and then going to a garden where did anybody think of another garden where things all started, where sinlessness and there was sin? Yeah, we start that story. We start the entire creation with a garden. And then he's going to a garden to continue what he was meant to do. So John doesn't say Garden of Gethsemane. That's not an easy word. And we're going to sing that in a song later. So that he goes to the garden on the Mount of Olives, the Garden of Gethsemane, with which he and his disciples entered. Now Judas, who betrayed him, also knew this place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples. So Judas, having procured a band of soldiers and some officers from the chief priests and the Pharisees, went there with lanterns and torches and weapons. I'm going to be setting up this story. I want you to visualize, because this is a very detailed section. Judas goes there to the garden, probably with the mindset, ha-ha, I know Jesus is going to be there, and I'm going to catch him. Well, Jesus knew that Judas knew, so sorry, Judas, that you don't get the points for that one. Jesus was there already knowing it. But then look at the scene here. He shows up with weapons, lanterns, and torches, with soldiers and some officers from the chief priests and the Pharisees. This scene, some translations say that it was a regiment. It could have been hundreds of Roman soldiers showing up. So imagine the scene, hundreds of soldiers, and then, so you've got Romans, Gentiles, and then you have officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, Jews, Jewish officers coming together. Together, Jews and Gentiles coming to capture Jesus with weapons. They were expecting a fight. And lanterns and torches. It was night. Why would they need lanterns and torches? To see what was going on. They were expecting Jesus and his disciples to run. So Judas came. Judas clearly, because he was setting this whole thing up, clearly had no idea what was going on, what would have happened. He did not understand who Jesus was. And Jesus displays it right here. Then Jesus, knowing all that would happen to him, came forward. He didn't step back and cower. He didn't say, whoa, whoa. He stepped ahead and then said to them, whom do you seek? And they answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. And I'm going to stop there because that was an insult. Remember earlier, if you recall, earlier in John, the question was asked, what good comes from Nazareth? Nazareth was looked down upon. So they're insulting him, saying, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus doesn't take that insult and correct them because he's Jesus. What he responds with is, I am he. And now I made I am red because the translations, many of them put he in italics. Over time, he was added for some clarity, but the original text, the Greek, says, I am. And he speaks the I am that he spoke before many times, saying who he was, meaning I am the I am, the Alpha, the Omega. It's all there. And the power is behind those words because Judas, who betrayed him, was standing with them. When Jesus said to them, I am he, they drew back and fell on the ground. Imagine that scene. This multitude, this small army or large army, comes and gets knocked back to the ground by the words coming out of Jesus' mouth. Also, see the scene there. This is again showing who Judas was. He was standing with them. He had transitioned away from the apostles, away from his friends that he had spent years with, standing with the mob, the angry mob, the attackers. So Jesus' words knocks them to the ground. And that had more than one purpose, to show his power, but he had stepped forward, and when they must have been getting up, and he said, okay, now that's clear, I imagine they're all a little rattled, and they all want to, probably mad, upset, they have no idea what's going on. Can you imagine getting knocked over, having no clue what just happened? They get up, and he asks them again, and I think it's to diffuse the situation once more. He says, whom do you seek? And they said, despite having just seen that display of power, Jesus of Nazareth. And he answered, I told you that I am he. And so he took that moment to protect those with him. He said, so if you seek me, let these men go. And this was to fulfill the word that he had spoken. Of those whom you gave me, I have lost not one. Previously, he spoke those words, that was going to come to pass, that his people wouldn't be harmed, wouldn't come to harm. So the power of his words stops this force momentarily. But Jesus knows what's coming. Jesus isn't confused. It said he knew that they were coming to get him. But in the heat of the moment, and I think probably emboldened by that display of power just there, and probably riled up because of everything that's going on, an angry mob with torches and weapons and lanterns has come to steal, to take away or do harm to their teacher, their friend. And so Simon Peter, having a sword, which wasn't strange, many of them carried swords for protection. It was dangerous people. He drew it, and he struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. And it's interesting, in this, in John, he has a name. The servant's name was Malchus. Pause right there. There's some interpretation about what Peter was doing. Was he so bold to attack and that he wanted to cut the servant's head off? Or possibly was he not really knowing what he was doing and kind of whiffed it and got his ear? I don't know. We might have some apologies to Peter in heaven when we see him, that maybe he was being brave or maybe he was not thinking clearly. Some people think he may have even attacked from behind if he cut the right ear with a right hand, but maybe he was left-handed. We're not sure. But Peter makes a rash decision here because Jesus says to him, put your sword into its sheath. Shall I not drink that the cup that the Father has given me? Jesus says to him, you can't stop what's happening. You can't get in the way. You need to calm down. Another interesting point here is John never mentions, like the other Gospels do, that Jesus puts the ear back on. I think John just didn't want to give, wanted Peter to have a hard time here in this whole scene, because that theme continues with poor Peter. But Jesus knows what's happening. Jesus calms his guys. He stops the crowd momentarily, and he accepts his fate. He says he's going to, you can't stop it. The Father has given me this cup. So the band of soldiers and their captain and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. I'm going to keep saying this. Picture this. He's being bound like a criminal. They have not made any charges. This is at night. They've come as an angry mob, soldiers, civilians, Jews, Romans, and they bind him. First they led him to Annas, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year. It was Caiaphas who had advised the Jews that it would be expedient that one man should die for the people. Do you remember Caiaphas back during the Lazarus story? Where everybody was talking about Lazarus, of course, somebody came back from the dead, and they were the authorities were very frightened. They didn't know what to do. And Caiaphas unwittingly professes prophecy, saying that to stop all this, we got to end one man. It's a logical choice on his part. It's calculated, it's cold, it's heartless. He says, someone has to die. Let's kill this guy and end it all. That one person will be the sacrifice, and we're done with it. And really, he didn't quite get it. He thought he would quell an uprising. He thought he would get rid of a leader, and it would be done. But he didn't get that the one dying for everyone was a little more significant than he thought. Oh, so I'm going back. So they took Jesus to Annas, Caiaphas' father-in-law. Now, Caiaphas was the high priest for the year, but Annas would have been like the paterfamilias, the head dad of a lot of these high priests, and was likely pulling the strings in this situation and for all the high priests. So Annas was very important. Again, middle of the night, they take him to Annas. But as they're going there, keep imagining the scene, and I still think that the apostles and Simon Peter and John, they didn't quite see what was happening. Because remember, Jesus has been chased. They wanted to kill him. They wanted to stone him. He had to run and hide. He just kind of disappeared from parties and from gatherings. So they're like thinking, it's fine. We've done this before. Okay, this time there's a couple hundred Roman soldiers. All right, nobody panic. So I still think they've got a little bit of some guts left in them, and they want to follow along. So Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Interesting point. Is this John? Maybe not, because we don't know why John would know the high priest. So there are different ideas of who this might be. So we've got this other disciple, but that disciple was known to the high priest, and he entered with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest. But Peter stood outside at the door, and you kind of imagine he's walking in and he realizes Peter's not behind him. So the other disciple, who was known to the high priest, went out and spoke to the servant girl who kept watch at the door, and brought Peter in. The servant girl at the door said to Peter, you also are not one of this man's disciples, are you? And she says also, so she must have known that the other disciple who went in was one of Jesus' disciples, because she says, you also, right? And again, imagine the scene. This is a servant girl who's minding a door, not a soldier, not an official, not some angry person. And Peter's instant response is, I'm not. He loses it right there. He gives up right there. Jesus has just gone in ahead of him, and he, nope, I'm not one of his. Now the servants and officers had made a charcoal fire because it was cold, and they were standing and warming themselves. Peter was also with them, standing and warming himself. So he says, nope, I'm not, and comes into the courtyard, and they're standing around a fire. And I can imagine they're just all standing there and saying, gee, oh, shucks, that Jesus guy, what a good guy, ugh. Man, this is bad. What a rough deal. We should go help him, right? We should go take care of Jesus. This man. No, they were probably all part of this angry mob saying, oh man, I hope Jesus gets it. This is gonna be good. What are they doing in there? I hope he gets what he's due. And so Peter is complicit, standing there at the fire, either through his silence, or maybe he's not. Oh, yeah, Jesus, nodding along. So he's standing there. I feel bad for him because he doesn't know what's happening. He doesn't know what's going on. But Jesus' friend who had just said, Jesus, I got your back no matter what, a few hours later is standing around a fire with people who want to kill his friend. So let me jump back to the high priest. This is Annas. He questioned Jesus about his disciples and teaching. Again, middle of the night, this should not have happened under Jewish law. They don't conduct court at night. They most likely woke Annas up, and remember who he is. He's one of the high priests. He's the high priest. So he has been through Passover inspecting the sacrifices. See the symbolism here? See the imagery here? He is grilling Jesus. He's bringing Jesus for an inspection. The sacrifice, they don't all know it. They don't know it, of course. So this is not the way a court should work. This is the way courts work in some other countries where the rules aren't very good for the accused. Because he says, tell me about your disciples and your teaching. Tell me who your friends are and what you've been doing wrong. He starts off making Jesus defend himself. And Jesus says, he answers him, I have spoken openly in the world. I've always taught in synagogues and in the temple where all Jews come together. I have said nothing in secret. We've seen this, right? Have you guys been paying attention? He's in the synagogues making everyone angry, making them pick up rocks and want to throw them at his head. They have all seen it. Said nothing in secret. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. They know what I said. Annas wants him to incriminate himself. Annas wants him to tell him where all his friends are, and so they can round them up too. And Jesus says, please tell me what they say I said, because there's no secret. Well, when he said these things, a nearby officer, one of the officers standing by, struck Jesus with his hand, saying, is that how you answer the high priest? Clearly, this guy doesn't get it either. Jesus is explaining himself and asking, you tell me politely. I mean, I'm sure we've all had those moments where you're accused of something or think you're accused of something, and the words going through your head are like, I want to question politely, but the words are going to come out, and it's going to be a big confusion. They were primed and ready for an argument. They were all ready. Everything has been predetermined by them that Jesus was guilty. So he hears the words coming out. He slaps Jesus, and then Jesus answered him, if what I said is wrong, bear witness about the wrong. But what if what I said is right, why do you strike me? Jesus asks again, you have no grounds for your accusations. You just hit me because you said something was wrong. What did I say is wrong? So then the situation is too much for Annas. because he can't control it. He can't get Jesus. So he sent Jesus bound, still bound, to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now we go back to Simon Peter, standing and warming himself. And I want to go back to that slap, Jesus getting struck. Simon Peter's standing there. Peter's standing there seeing this. I think that might have been a moment where there was a big turn, where he thinks, oh no, this is bad. This is not resolving itself. We have the high priest. We have one of his officers. Jesus has just been struck. He's still bound. This isn't getting better. But he's still standing there warming himself, and someone else says, so they said to him, you also are not one of his disciples, are you? And he denies it. He says, I am not. And then one of the servants of the high priest, a relative of the man of Malchus, whose ear Peter had cut off, I think he's seeing the scene here. It was dark, there were lanterns, there were torches, but you cut my relative's ear off. Did I not see you in the garden with him? Peter denied it, and at once the rooster crowed. And that's exactly what Jesus said would happen. You're going to deny me three times before the rooster crows, before morning. And now, I believe it's in Matthew, in one of the other Gospels, Peter denies it so much, he uses expletives. He says swear words because he's so upset that he denies it. He not only says, nah, I'm not one of them. He says, bleep, no, I'm not. And all of you had better stop asking. Rooster crows, I think that situation for Peter right there, I can't imagine the feeling of denying his friend, denying his teacher, denying the person he had just said, I got you no matter what. So, John doesn't cover all of what Caiaphas has to say. So Jesus went to Caiaphas, and then they led him from Caiaphas to the governor's headquarters. By now it was early morning. They themselves did not enter the governor's headquarters so that they would not